If you need one. So we're talking about, as a Christian, what responsibility do we have? It must be coming through there, but it's not coming out here. Hello, hello, hello. There we go. Starting to get a little bit. Hello, hello, hello. Okay, that's working now. But how do we as Christians, what responsibilities do we have in different areas? We've talked about friends and family and all of these things, because when we commit our lives to God through Christ, we accept, or rather we're supposed to accept, the responsibilities that come along with. There I am. I thought I was lost. We can take it down quite a bit, James. Hello, 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 hello. Hello, hello. That's better. Yeah, we're good there. But what we commit to a lot of things. See, it's not just a one-way street. When we come to God in faithful obedience through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, what do we expect? When I come to God through Christ, what is it that I expect? What's my expectation level? An opportunity to go to heaven. I expect to be forgiven of my sins, right? I expect to receive the hope through the forgiveness of those sins of having a home eternal in heaven. Are those valid expectations that I should have when I come to God through Christ? Absolutely. What does God expect? Faithful obedience. It's a two-way street. I don't get forgiveness of sin, and that's kind of a wrong way to say that. When I do come to God, Simon the sorcerer was forgiven of his sins. But if you get what I mean, I don't get to receive the benefit of the hope of eternal life if I don't perform, or if I don't give back and satisfy God's expectations. Because there's expectations on both sides. That's what we're talking about. That do I as a Christian recognize what God's expectations are of me? Because here's what I can tell you. All of those that are in the world that claim to be religious, that claim to have a relationship with God, don't understand fully God's level of expectation for them. Most of us in our lifetime have had jobs. Okay? There is a level of expectation that you accept when you take the job. And all those expectations will be different dependent upon, excuse me. Thank you. I tried to blow my brains out, but you got to have something in there to blow out. So, but there's dependent on the job that we have, the levels of expectation are different. Charles is expected to run his route and to make sure that all the deliveries get made. Eric's expected to list a home and to do what he has to do to help sell that home. Kim's expected to turn out the designs and whatnot that her clients are looking for. We've all got different levels of expectation put upon us. Now, we expect to get paid for the job. What if we don't perform? Is it a valid expectation to expect to get paid? No, it's not. It's a two-way street. That's what we're talking about with this concept of the struggles of the modern-day Christian. How do we meet our levels of expectation? Lesson 5 is talking about socialization. Okay, and we began the discussion last week a little bit, but we're going to continue with it tonight. It is time to start class. We want to open with a prayer. Charles, could you lead us in that prayer? Amen. Thank you. I apologize. I failed to mention. We didn't see the sun today because of all the fires and smoke and everything that's going on. The building in Shaver where the Church of Christ used to meet is gone. It burned down. We've got a number of brothers and sisters in Christ, not necessarily from this congregation, but I can name four from Clovis who have all been given notice to be ready to jump in the car and leave for evacuation. My granddaughter being one of those. She lives about, the road you turn on is about a half mile this side of Sierra High School. And Prather's shut down. You can't get into Prather. 168 was closed at the bottom of the four lane. They may have closed it all the way in to pray there if you don't live in there. And so they've already moved their animals and they've packed up and they're just sitting there waiting for a phone call to jump in the car and leave. Eric Watkins, a member, he and his wife Laura, members of Clovis, they've been put on notice. Steve and Sherry Bird, one of the elders out of Clovis. Larry and Nancy Bird have been told that they might have to, but they're not on the warning list yet. They live a little bit farther down the mountain. So if the wind changes again, all of those families could have to pack up and leave. So we do need to remember all of our brothers and sisters that could be in danger. And there's probably those that I don't know about. I know that there are some that attend up at the Church of Christ there in Shaver on a fairly regular basis that live up there, but I just don't know them by name. So that's something we want to keep in mind. And we also want to keep in mind our brother John Salter. Brittany said today was a good day. Yeah. You know, dependent upon your level of good, I suppose. Okay. For what he's been going through, today was a good day. So we need to keep him in mind. Okay, and there's also a brother from Oakdale who's up there fighting. And so we do need to remember all the responders also. Good point. Okay, socialization. Somebody please read our quote, Hebrews 10:25. You can put 24 along with it if you'd like. Oh, go ahead, James. I know. Oh, Irene says she knows it. Okay. James, we didn't put the mic in front of you. And all the more as you see the day approaching. Verse 24 says, let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. And then what he says in verse 25 is the how. That's what he wants from us. Verse 25 tells us how to do it. So here's my question. Is that a valid expectation from God towards us? Yes, it is. So to the best of our abilities, that's what we need to do, right? So the first question that we talked about last week on the lesson sheet was, I have to go to church. What's the immediate problem that you see in that statement? The have to portion. Yeah, but here's the point. Doesn't Hebrews 10, 24 and 5 tell me I have to go to church?
Yeah, but it's your attitude about it.
Okay. I saw a hand there, Eric.
Well, I was going to say, if 24 is any indication of what happens in verse 25, that's one of the places that love and good work should be abounding, and that's where I need to go to get that information. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, my hip is but yeah, the assembling of ourselves gives us an opportunity not only to meet the command, but the command for myself, but to help others.
Okay. James, and then Charles. Charles.
I look at it more of a, I need to go to church.
Okay. Okay. What can I receive back? But isn't that the way that two-way street with God works? I've got a whole lot of things in my life that I need. Sermon Sunday is going to be on what I need for me. God is willing to provide those things if I meet him. And it's not even meeting him halfway. I almost said 90-10, but it's probably more like 99.9.1. God does everything for me. And he doesn't ask for an awful lot of in return. Just everything I am. Irene?
So by us assembling together, it is for our good.
Yes. Yeah. James?
The question I have about Hebrews 10:25, is that verse directed towards the internal man, or is it directed towards what's good for the congregation?
Yes.
By that is that ultimately, if you read it, he says, not to forsake, which means to willfully and acknowledging that I am refusing to come, our assembly together, not your assembly, not you going to services, but our assembly together, for what reason? So that
yeah. And I think the answer to the question is yes. There's a benefit going both directions. And the reason I wanted to kind of go back over that was because the statement, I have to go to church, is an absolutely true statement. I have to go to church. But if I go to church, if I attend, and I've got the bad attitude, or I don't want to be here, or while I'm here, I'm texting on my phone, playing games, doing, I might as well not be here, right? Might as well leave, because it's not doing me any good to be here. We referred to Matthew 7, where those said, didn't we do all these great things? Did they do good things in the name of the Lord? Yes. Then why did the Lord refuse them? Say it. Bad attitude. See, there's going, this is my opinion, take it as such. There are going to be a whole lot more people lost because of bad attitude than bad words and deeds. That's just, there's no way to get around that. Because I can do good things, but if I don't do them for the right reasons, doesn't do me any good. So, when we talk about the concept then of socialization, how we present ourselves to others is a direct manifestation, and I put in the lesson of who and what we are, But I think I'd like to, if I might go back and amend that and say it this way. How we present ourselves to others is a direct manifestation of how we present ourselves to God. There's a direct correlation between the two, is there not? Okay. If what others see in me, in what I say, and or how I act, that is where their perception of me comes from. Me. Now, with that said, there's a caveat. Some people don't look for the good in people. They look for what they think is bad or wrong, and it doesn't matter what good you do. It is always going to be twisted and turned so that in their minds they take it as something bad. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about people that are like that. Fortunately, those kinds of people are rather rare. And that's good. So what messages do my words and actions send to others?
It tells them if you're sincere about worshiping God, or if you're, you know, more interested in just doing what the world does and really not that interested in doing what you say you believe.
Okay. Are you sincere, Irene?
I think it tells people who you serve.
Say it again. Now, I want to take those two things and slam them together like an Oreo cookie, because they are absolutely necessary to each other. One, I have to be sincere. Sincere in how I serve God. So, to that end, what shows my sincerity in my service to the Lord?
Your actions, your behaviors.
In accordance to what? Am I keeping all of God's word to the very best of my ability? Or am I saying, well, I don't, you know, that doesn't need, or, you know, if James 2:10 applies to me, then I am not sincere in my service to my God. James 2:10. At one point, you've missed it in all. Okay? That's what we're talking about. People see my sincerity. They see who I serve. And you would be, well, hopefully not, surprised at how many people actually pay attention, even if you don't think they are. And I've told the story how a good friend of mine was approached by a man who had lost his father. And he said, Mark, would you do the funeral service? Mark didn't know the father, knew the man only because he worked with him. They had never gone out and done anything together. And Mark said, well, why me? And here's what the man's answer was. I've watched you. And I don't know anybody I would rather have than somebody who serves their God the way you do. You don't know who's watching, folks. I tell the story of Benny Zingarelli, and some of you knew her, who attended here for years. You know why she became a Christian? Because she watched the family that lived across the street from her get up and go to services 3 times a week or more if there were meetings or other things going on. One day she walked across the street and said, hey, I want what you got. And they started teaching her. That was the Denton Thompson family. She lived right across the street from them. You don't know who's watching. Okay? And a lot of people see what we're doing. That's the messages that our words and actions send to other people. Eric? Yeah. Why do we, or maybe even should we, assemble? Now, mind you, these lessons, just so everybody is aware, these lessons were written well before COVID-19 struck. So this isn't a commentary or discussion about that. Why do we assemble, Eric?
Mm-hmm. He's asked me to do this. That's one small thing that I can do. But there's a benefit, and that was my opening remarks, there's a benefit relationship here, is that I am to be able to encourage others, and if I'm encouraging others, their command is to encourage me. So it's a two-way street, and the benefit is there because I know that Christ died for this, and I call it a privilege.
Exactly. Jason, then Irene.
On a very rudimentary level, groups that stop meeting don't start meeting again. And it doesn't really matter if you feel like you need it at the time. Other people might need it, and by you being there, you help the group stay alive. And that's for everything. That's for local bands. That's for chess clubs. That's for churches. Stop meeting, it's very, very difficult to start
up.
Yeah. James?
The question we have to answer is, do we as individuals have the power to stop and proceed to say on our own, by ourselves? Do we have the capability within ourselves to push those things aside when he comes in the master craftsmanship that he can portray to deceive our hearts and our minds? Can we do that on our own? The Hebrew writer very clearly says that we are to encourage and exhort one another to do what? To keep the deceitfulness and the hardness of the sin to come within us.
Yeah.
Ultimately, having accountability partners is what we are with each other. Helps us understand when we have gone astray, we have somebody who loves us enough to pull us back to the straight path because they love us and care for us, and they are not afraid to stand there and say, you are going the wrong direction, and you need help. And that's ultimately what I see the church, one of the responsibilities of the church.
Absolutely. Irene, I apologize, I skipped you. Go ahead. Is it a command? It kind of reads like that to me. You ever seen a military movie and the whoever it is, lieutenant, captain, whatever, gives an order and everybody just kind of stands there and he says, why does everybody think I'm making suggestions? Michael? Say it again. We've got to have God as our guide. If God's not leading us, who is? Satan. That's the only other option. It's God or it's Satan. Now, I might say I'm a good man. I'm not doing all those bad things out there. Yada, 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 yada. If it's not God, Christ says, it's Satan. You're either with us or you're against us. It's just that simple. Getting people to accept that is the difficult part. Because people don't want, No, I'm a good person. I don't lie. I don't steal. I don't carouse around. Whatever the things that they define as being bad or evil. And it always cracks me up. You hear somebody say that, and then they invite you over for the game, and they say, don't worry, there's going to be plenty of beer. Sometimes things just don't seem to go together, do they? So, we assemble because there's a mutual benefit for me as well as for others. We assemble because God has commanded us to. Either that or Hebrews chapter 10, beginning in about verse 19, is all suggestion. I don't believe it to be the case. So, the crux of this, then, is our attitude, which we've kind of already talked about a little bit. And here's the point. What attitudes do others see in me, in us? When I've got somebody who comes to me and says, hey, we've got a tea time at Pebble Beach on Sunday morning, 8:30. We're all going to go over Saturday night. We'll, you know, have a good meal, maybe hit one of the clubs, spend the night there at Spanish Bay Inn, because we can't afford the Pebble Beach Inn. Okay? And we've got a tea time Sunday morning, and somebody backed out, so yours is already paid for. And my response is, oh, man. I can't. I got to go to church. What's the message I just sent? Say it. I don't want to go to church. I'd much rather be there with you. But if I don't go, I'm going to get my hand slapped. So what is that telling that person? I'm not very sincere in my service to God, am I? So why should he listen to me when I say, hey, would you like to have Bible study? Why? So I can be like you? I've already seen your level of sincerity. No, I don't think I need that. You see the point? List some of the different ways. Did you give some thought to some of the different ways that we project ourselves to others? I'll give you one as an example. One of our favorite places, once or twice a week, we try to help support the local restaurants that are struggling. And one of our favorite places to go is called Subs and Grub. And I'll put a plug in for Donna. It's on the corner of Fowler and Ashland, on the northeast corner. And she makes the best sub sandwiches, steak sandwiches, ever. To the point that if you really like a barbecued steak sandwich, go in and order a gill. She knows exactly what that is. Yeah, and if you like the turkey and veggies, order a Karen on wheat. Gills is on white, okay? But I was in there yesterday, and she had a brand new gal. And when I walked in, she looked up and said, two larges? And I said, no, make mine a large, make the gill a large, and make two small Karens, one for her and one for Nadine. In fact, I still got half of mine at home I'm going to eat. But I had grabbed a bag of chips. Well, when I set the chips down, the brand new gal who was running the register didn't see it. And Donna hollered at her, okay, that'll be, I think it was $7.50 for the large and $6.50 for the smalls. And she rang it up. She says, it's going to be this much. I said, I don't think you got the chips. Well, there was somebody that had come in behind me, and I didn't see the look on their face, but Donna apparently did, because Donna looked up and saw them, and she said, you know what? I don't have to worry about the preacher. He's always honest. And I could have just taken the chips, a small thing, $1.50, right, for a bag of 75-cent chips. Okay? Well, she's got to make a profit. I don't have a problem with it. I could have just walked out, and no one would have noticed because the little gal behind the register paid no attention. Very small thing, right? But that's the perception now, and over the years that perception's been developed, that when Donna looks at me and sees the preacher, and she's got two names, one's the preacher, the other's the umpire, because she knows me in both capacities. But that's her perception. Eric.
So Karen and I took advantage of being in Nevada where you can eat inside a restaurant in Nevada. prior to our food coming, we prayed. You should have seen the shocked looks on people's faces.
In Nevada?
In Nevada.
Was it in a casino? Oh, ooh, yeah.
I rarely see anybody pray anymore. I rarely saw people praying even in COVID, before COVID. But I tell the story that we were up at one of the San Jose lectureship. Jack, Danny Matchett, and myself went out to lunch in between. And we prayed over our meal. And a woman walked over after she had finished her meal and said, "I noticed you prayed over your meal." We said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, would you mind praying for my daughter? She's stage 4 breast cancer." She's crying while she's telling us the story. And we said, "Yeah, absolutely." She starts walking away. I said, "Wait, where are you going? You asked us to pray for your daughter. Come and join us." And that had to have an impact. Well, as a matter of fact, we tried to get her set up with David Barnes and see if we could, you know, see if that would further itself to go. But one of the most simplest things, but how many of us are embarrassed to bow our head?
Yeah, very simple things like that have such a huge impact. Jason?
I think we forget how impactful those things are because to us growing up in it, or a lot of us anyway, myself included, it's just happening. You know, okay, we pray, or all we can do now is pray, when the attitude should be, we need to pray first. And Aaron will appreciate this. There's this... say is one of them is 99% and one of them is 101%. If you're only given 99% each day, you wind up with a deficit, a huge deficit. But if you do that little thing extra, it's not some big grandiose statement. You don't have to come out and say, "This is where I am and this is where I stand." It's in the little things that people notice.
Exactly. We had a group there in Oakdale almost, well, probably three times a month. As a group, we would go out for lunch after services. One of the restaurants that we frequented was a place called Javi's, a Mexican place up there. And they had a rather big table that we'd have 15 or 20 of us that were sitting around this table. And it happened to be in a room that was adjacent to the bar. We always prayed. And it got to the point to where one time the waitress that was waiting on our table came out and had two or three others that were helping her carry our food. And as she walked out, she saw us just starting to bow for a prayer. And we heard her say to the others, "Oh, wait, they're going to have their prayer." And they waited until we were done before they served the food. Because she knew. She had waited on us that many times. Just little things. What else can you think of? Little things that you know have come up and made an impact. Kim?
Well, one time I
Oh, they were eavesdropping, huh? Oh, wait a minute, with Cecil and James. They might have been loud enough. Yeah. Good. Good. Little things. Eric?
My dad, when he was in the hospital, passed away from cancer. Everybody from the church that visited him always said a prayer for him. The family was always there. And when he passed away, one of the caregivers, one of the nurses, came in. He was a male nurse. And he came in and he said, in all my years, I've never seen such a praying group as they're watching people.
People watch. Anyone else? Brittany. We all think so. Little, and that's not necessarily a little thing, but people notice. When I was coaching basketball out of San Joaquin, varsity, told the kids day one, if you cuss in practice, for every cuss word you use, you're going to be running a lap. You're running after practice. And I had really good ears then. I heard everything. And after about the first 5 or 6 days of practice, after the whole team had run, I heard him talking. Man, he's serious about this. They never heard a cuss word come out of my mouth. And it was to the point that actually the head coach quit cussing. Not that he ever did a whole lot, because he didn't, but he just cut it out. And he told me one time after practice, he said, I don't want to have to run with the kids. And I said, well, okay. But practice would end and I'd just point. And they'd all, you heard that? I said, you're running. Little things. And at the end of that season, we went weeks in practice without ever hearing a cuss word. And there were a lot of reasons for them to cuss. Now, I recognize it was a Catholic school and they were all supposed to be good Catholics, but that made very little difference. They just quit. Part of it was because they didn't like to run. But you know what the other part of it was? They respected me and my wishes. And I was told that by 4 of the seniors. That meant a lot. Eric? So that speaks to the sincerity of why we're doing what we're doing. Just ask yourself, am I doing this because this is the right thing to do according to what God's telling me? Or am I doing this because I want those four seniors to come to me and say, hey, we really thought you did a good job. One way is the right way. You get to pick which one.
So when I was a little kid, seems a lot longer than I used to, I watched my dad do this a lot, and going to what Eric was talking about how you were not to be seen doing things. My dad used to do a lot of buying meals for people in restaurants. I remember succinctly, we're in Las Cruces, and this older gentleman came in, and he was counting dimes and pennies and trying to come up with a meal, and my father, who didn't make a lot of money, he was a preacher, barely made the rent. And I remember him buying that guy a meal, and I asked him, I was like, why didn't you say anything? He says, I don't get any joy from men, but in my head, I can always see, you gotta imagine the look on this guy's face when he goes, what do you mean I don't have to pay for this? So it's kind of been a tradition in my family to do that, and to do Surprise Santa. And I don't get to see the looks on their faces, but I got a pretty good imagination. And I like playing jokes on people, so that's kind of like, I got my own little joke in my head. Like,
if you've never done that, do it. Yeah. It's an absolute kick. Waitress comes over and says, hey, see that? Bring me their ticket, please. Really? Yeah. I've done that some, and it's an absolute kick. I would recommend it just to, you walk out going, that's good.
Because the ultimate idea is that we're God's children. We're stewards of this money. It's not ours. This is all God's. Yeah. We're just stewards of it. So when we're, when there's that homeless person on the street that's obviously thirsty, do we give them water? Do we reach out to them saying, are you okay? I mean, we're stewards of this. We don't own it.
That's it.
It's the talents, right?
So, we're going to homework then. Proverbs 23 and verse 7. For as he thinks within himself, so he is. I kind of want to know what that means to you. So, put some thoughts down and we'll begin our discussion there next week. Thank you all. Appreciate it.